So who you gonna be? Good evening, everyone. You're listening to UR Radio at Western North Carolina Community Media Center. I hope you stay with us for the next hour as we explore the teachings of various enlightened ones. Our show is called Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. And I hope you join us every Thursday evening from 8 to 9 Eastern. I'm Louisa Dyer, a holistic counselor and metaphysical author, and a Western North Carolina native, I'm happy to say. And if you'd like to know more about who I am, you're free to visit my website at louisadyer.com or louisadyer.net. And in the second half of this show, you'll be able to submit questions and comments through Facebook. Well, you can do that right now, actually, on the Conscious Co-Creating Online Radio Facebook page. And in the second half of the show, I will be able to respond to some of those comments. So I'd love to hear from whoever would like to put something in there, and we'll be happy to answer any questions or take any suggestions if that's possible. My intention here with the show is to share the very, very many tools that are available that can help each and every one of us learn how to thrive instead of just survive. So if you're interested in personal growth or spiritual evolution, or you just want your life to be filled with more joy and peace, it's very clear that you can have it. We have all the information, all the tools, everything available that we need in order to do that. It's about the willingness to do it and the courage, actually the courage to have the willingness. And hopefully what we discuss tonight will inspire you to begin living the life that you've longed for, even more than you already have been. So over the next few months, we're going to be exploring the work of some of my favorite teachers, Dr. David Hawkins, Byron Katie, Eckhart Tolle, and Michelle Wright of Paralandra. All of them have websites, and all of them have contributed greatly to humanity. And I encourage you to seek out the stuff that they've done, and just studying one of those could enrich your life amazingly. The first three of those I mentioned, Hawkins, Katie, and Tolle, are clearly enlightened beings. And Michelle Wright of Paralandra has developed methods of communicating directly with nature intelligence, and that's an incredibly empowering way to actually focus on your health on every level, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual. And so I will be talking some about her work as well. And what we've been talking about the last few weeks is David Hawkins and his discovery that all truth is knowable, and how you can actually know the truth about anything you would like to, and how to present questions to the field of consciousness so that you're more likely to get accurate answers, because there's certainly correct ways and incorrect ways to do that so that you get accurate information. And tonight we're going to talk about Byron Katie. And I know a lot of people have never even heard of Byron Katie, and a lot of people have heard about her, but not quite. They don't really know what she does or what she is. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about her, and I'm going to start out by talking about the enlightening, how she woke up, the description of how she woke up, which is very interesting. But before I go into that, I wanted to say that I don't think I ever mentioned that with David Hawkins, but he also had a waking up experience. And with him, he was very close to dying and was actually pretty much, you know, in bed dying. And as he was descending into that death, and he actually says Dante did a really good job of describing the seven layers of hell that he was going through. But as he was going into that, he actually said, if there is a God, because David Hawkins tried his best to be an atheist, but couldn't quite make it, so he was actually an agnostic. But so when he was dying, he said, if there is a God, I ask for help now. And then he had an awakening experience and everything changed. And that was quite a few years ago. And Eckhart Tolle actually describes something interestingly similar. But we're going to talk about Byron Katie's story tonight, which I think is really intriguing. And for her, it happened in 1986. She was 43 years old. She was in a halfway house in a small town in Southern California, up in the desert, actually. And she woke up on the floor and had her experience. And before that, she had what you might think of as a very typical life. You know, two marriages, three children, a successful career. And then she had had like a 10-year sort of downward spiral into rage, paranoia, despair. And for a couple of years, she had been really so depressed that she had rarely left home and would stay in bed for, like, weeks at a time. And her children would actually tiptoe around by her room or around her because she would have these rage outbursts that really frightened them and scared them to death. And so she finally wanted to check herself into some place because she was miserable and making everybody else miserable. And the only thing her insurance would cover was this halfway house for eating disorders. And so she went there, and they actually put her in an attic room by herself because she was so raging that all the other patients were very frightened of her. And so she was in an attic room by herself. And after being there for about a week, she woke up one morning on the floor because she had been sleeping in the floor because she felt like she was too unworthy to sleep in the bed. And she woke up on the floor with no concept of who she is or what she is. And it was like everything was completely different. And this is what she says about that. There was no me, she says. All my rage, all the thoughts that had been troubling me, my whole world, the whole world, was gone. At the same time, laughter welled up from the depths and just poured out. Everything was unrecognizable. It was as if something else had woken up. It opened its eyes. It was looking through Katie's eyes. And it was so delighted. It was intoxicated with joy. There was nothing separate, nothing unacceptable to it. Everything was its very own self. And so then after Katie went home from that experience, everybody could tell that she was a very different person. And her daughter, who was 16 at the time, actually said this about her mom after she came home from the halfway house. She writes, "We knew that the constant storm was over. She had always yelled at me and my brothers and criticized us. I used to be scared to be in the same room with her. Now she seemed completely peaceful. She would sit still for hours on the window seat or out in the desert. She was joyful and innocent, like a child, and she seemed to be filled with love. People in trouble started knocking on our door, asking for her help. She'd sit with them and ask them questions, mainly, is that true? When I'd come home miserable with a problem like, my boyfriend doesn't love me anymore, Mom would look at me as if she knew that wasn't possible, and she'd ask me, honey, how could that be true? As if I had just told her that we were living in China. So Katie talks about that, the fact that it took her a really long time to be able to talk about this experience that she'd had in a way that was, you know, intelligible or understandable to other people. At first she could only talk about it in terms of, it was like a freedom waking up inside of her, or a realization that every thought she'd ever had simply wasn't true. But just sitting with people, it's like they began to let go some of their pain. And so people started showing up at her house, and they came to learn from her. And she began to be able to sort of conceptualize what had happened to her and what was continuing to happen inside of her own mind. She calls it inquiry, and it's a way to just question your own thoughts. And basically, there are four simple questions, and she really wanted it to be a way, something that anyone could do for themselves so that they did not need her there at all. And so when people would actually ask her if she were enlightened, I just loved her response. When they asked her if she was enlightened, Katie would say, "I'm just someone who knows the difference between what hurts and what doesn't." And that's really the focus of all the work that she does. And actually, her work is called The Work. And her website, if you want to find out more about it, is thework.com. And so she's been on the road pretty much since 1993. This happened to her in 86. And she sort of just kind of took those years to figure out how to articulate what was going on for her. And she's been on the road basically since 1993, traveling all over the world. She works in prisons, she works in hospitals, she does retreats, she now has like a sort of an addiction retreat center, and she's worked with millions and millions and millions of people. And with people who actually work with Katie, there is an interesting thing that happens, and I've heard this from a number of people, And this is actually a quote from her first book, Loving What Is. And this is what people who've been doing her inquiry, is what she calls it, what people have been doing inquiry for a while tend to say. The work is no longer something I do. It is doing me. They describe how, without any conscious intention, the mind notices each stressful thought and undoes it before it can cause any suffering. Their internal argument with reality has disappeared, and they find that what remains is love. Love for themselves, for other people, and for whatever life brings. The title of this book describes their experience. Loving what is becomes as easy and natural as breathing. Isn't that cool? And so in this first book that she put out in 2002, that's the name of it, Loving What Is, and she says that the purpose of this book is actually your happiness. And so the whole book is focused on teaching you how to use this process of inquiry that is the process that she uses herself to actually eliminate the stressful thoughts and the stressful feelings. And so all over the world, people are using this. And, you know, I had the pleasure a few years back when I was editing for the local magazine called Spirit in the Smokies of interviewing Byron Katie and doing a book review, actually, when Loving What Is first came out, and did a little weekend thing with her. And it was so amazing because just from reading the book and interacting with her for a very short period of time, I noticed that it's like what those people said, that the work starts doing you. I was one of those people that used to get very, very, very upset about all the injustice in the world. You know, this political thing shouldn't be happening. This environmental thing should not be happening. And I had a lot of anger, a lot of angst, a lot of fear about what it meant for us and our world because this and that and the other was happening. And almost immediately when I began doing Katie's work, that simple question is it true that that should not be happening? I mean, can I actually know for sure in the big scheme of things that anything should not be happening? And I discovered very quickly that there wasn't really much of anything that I could be absolutely sure of, you know? So we're going to get into what the work is and the questions. We're going to do a little bit more of that more clearly when we come back from this little music break. But like, I wanted to read a quote before we did that. And this is actually on page one in Loving What Is. And this is Katie talking about noticing when your thoughts are arguing with what is, when your thoughts argue with reality. And this is what Katie says about that. She says, the only time we suffer is when we believe a thought that argues with what is. When the mind is perfectly clear, what is what we want. After I woke up to reality in 1986, people often referred to me as the woman who made friends with the wind. Barstow is a desert town where the wind blows a lot of the time, and everyone hated it. People even moved from there because they couldn't stand the wind. The reason I made friends with the wind, with reality, is that I discovered I didn't have a choice. I realized that it's insane to oppose it. When I argue with reality, I lose. But only 100% of the time. How do I know that the wind should blow? It's blowing. Katie has a lot of wonderful sayings like that. So we're going to talk a lot more about Katie and her work, and I'm actually going to give a lot more information about how you can use this to actually empower yourself and help yourself. And I'm hoping that next week I'm actually going to have someone to interview who does the work on a regular basis with people. I mean, I do it a little bit. In my work, but I certainly don't consider myself an expert in it. However, just the little bit that I have done it really changed my level of stress about what's going on in the world and helped me know that it's insane to argue with reality. Not that I can always be sane, but I do try. So we're going to take a little music break and we're going to hear a great song, Time for a Change by Here to Here. And I'm hoping that you're going to let your right brain activate and maybe your body move a little bit and really enjoy this song. And I will be back in a moment. Again, this is UR Radio, Louisa Dyer, and our show is Conscious Co-Creating Tools to Empower You. And now it is time for a change.
my heroes at? Where my soldiers at? Where my presidents and citizens and all their chests? Where my artists at? Where my dreamers at? Where my activists and hippie chicks and I know that we can do it, we can change the world. I know that we can be it, we can be the change we like to see. I know that we can do it, we can change the world. I know that we can be it, we can be the change we like to see. My scientists and pharmacists, my dealers at? Where my mother's at? Where my father's at? Where my human beings with beating hearts? Let's rock this track! I know that we can do it, we can change the world.
It is indeed time for a change. You're listening to UR Radio. This is Louisa Dyer. And the show is Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. And tonight we're talking about Byron Katie and her process of inquiry that she calls the work. And it is a way of questioning your own thoughts to eliminate those stressful thoughts. Obviously, if you're having thoughts that are making you happy, why would you question them? It's just the stressful thoughts. And so I wanted to read one more quote that Katie says, because I think it's important to understand where she's coming from before we actually talk about what the work is and isn't. And this is on page 3 of Loving What Is. Katie says, "I am a lover of what is, not because I'm a spiritual person, but because it hurts when I argue with reality. We can know that reality is good just as it is, because when we argue with it, we experience tension and frustration. We don't feel natural or balanced. When we stop opposing reality, action becomes simple, fluid, kind, and fearless." Doesn't that sound wonderful? Isn't that how we would like our action to be? Simple, kind, fluid, and fearless. Katie also says, "I have never experienced a stressful feeling that wasn't caused by attaching to an untrue thought. Behind every uncomfortable feeling, there's a thought that isn't true for us. The wind shouldn't be blowing. My husband should agree with me." We have a thought that argues with reality, then we have a stressful feeling, and then we act on that feeling, creating more stress for ourselves. It's easy to be swept away by some overwhelming feeling, so it's helpful to remember that any stressful feeling is like a compassionate alarm clock that says, you're caught in a dream. Depression, pain, and fear, those are gifts that say, sweetheart, take a look at what you're thinking right now. You're living in a story that isn't true for you. If you put your hand into a fire, does anyone have to tell you to move it? Do you have to decide No. When your hand starts to burn, it moves. You don't have to direct it. The hand moves itself. In the same way, once you understand through inquiry that an untrue thought causes suffering, you move away from it. And that's basically the idea of her inquiry, is to notice if your thoughts are true or not, if they're causing stress or not. It's quite a simple, very profound way of doing inquiry. It sort of takes what Eastern meditation techniques have attempted to teach Westerners for many, many years with very little success. And I think the easiest way, actually it's what Katie says and what everybody who does her work says, is that the easiest way to understand what the work is to actually meet it, is to actually have an example of it. Basically, there are four questions in the work. But to just tell you those questions, I'm going to do that. I'm going to tell you the questions, and then I'm going to read you an example of how it works, just to show you on the one hand how very simple it is, but also how incredibly powerful it is. The four questions are really simple. Whatever the stressful thought is, you first ask yourself, is it true? And then, can you absolutely know that it's true? And then, how do you react when you believe that thought? And four, who would you be without that thought? And then you turn it around. So I'm going to go into a whole sort of little dialogue here that she does to show you the power of that. So she's using an example that was her own example. And the statement that she's working with, the problem, the thing that has really been upsetting her, is that her husband, Paul, doesn't appreciate her. And so she's going to investigate that thought using these four questions. And so that's where she starts. Paul doesn't appreciate me. Is it true? Ask yourself, is it true that Paul doesn't appreciate me? And then be still. If you really want to know the truth, the answer will rise to meet the question. Let the mind ask the question and wait for the answer to surface. Reality for me, Katie says, is what is true. The truth is whatever is in front of you, whatever is really happening. Whether you like it or not, it's raining now. It shouldn't be raining, it's just a thought. In reality, there is no such thing as a should or shouldn't. Those are only thoughts that we impose onto reality. Without the should and shouldn't, we can see reality as it is. And this leaves us free to act efficiently, clearly, sanely. So when asking the first question, take your time. The work is about discovering what is true from the deepest part of yourself. You are listening for your answers now, not other people's, and not anything you have been taught. This can be very unsettling because you're entering the unknown. And I'll tell you from my personal experience, whenever there's a stressful thought going on and I ask that first question, is it true? My typical response is, yes, absolutely it's true. I mean, if I didn't think it was true on some level, it wouldn't be causing me stress, right? So that's why the second question is, can you absolutely know that it's true? Because it's not only me, it's a whole lot of people who, whatever the stressful thought is, the first question, is it true? Yes, it's absolutely true. That's why I'm freaking out about it. And so then the next question is, can you absolutely know that it's true? And many times, I'm going to read again from, this is actually, I'm reading from Katie's third book, which is called 1,000 Names for Joy, Living in Harmony with the Way Things Are. And this is actually an incredible book because this one, I think she published in 2007. And this is about her experience of what it's like to live enlightened. And her husband, who's Stephen Mitchell, he's actually someone who translated the Tao Te Ching, and he takes sayings from there and then has Katie talk about them. And it's a really, really beautiful book. But anyway, there's in each one of her books, the second book of hers was called I Need Your Love, Is That True? And that's really a great book. I think that came out in 2005. But all three of these books are just incredible. And each one talks about the work, and each one it gets refined a little bit. The four questions stay the same. But in this book, this description, I think, is so far the best one. So that's why I'm reading out of 1,000 Names for Joy. So you ask a question of a stressful thought, is it true? And if you say, yes, it's absolutely true, that's why I'm stressed out, then you want to say, can you absolutely know that it's true? I mean, in many cases, and here I'm going to start reading again, in many cases, the statement appears to be true. Of course it does. Your concepts are based on a lifetime of uninvestigated beliefs. Consider these questions. Can I absolutely know that it's true that Paul doesn't appreciate me? Can I ever really know when someone is appreciating me or not? Am I sometimes appreciating someone even when I don't express it? After I woke up to reality in 1986, again, I'm quoting here, I noticed many times how people in conversations, the media, and books made statements such as, there isn't enough understanding in the world, or there's too much violence, or we should love one another more, or these were stories I used to believe too. They seemed sensitive, kind, and caring, but as I heard them, I noticed that believing them caused stress, and that they didn't feel peaceful inside of me. For instance, when I heard the story, people should be more loving, the question would arise in me, can I absolutely know that that's true? Can I really know for myself, within myself, that people should be more loving? Even if the whole world tells me so, is it really true? And, to my amazement, when I listened within myself, I saw that the world is what it is, nothing more, nothing less. Where reality is concerned, there is no what should be. There is only what is, just the way it is, right now. The truth is prior to every story, and every story, prior to investigation, prevents us from seeing what's true. Now I could finally inquire of every potentially uncomfortable story, can I absolutely know that it's true? And the answer, like the question, was an experience. No, I would stand rooted in that answer. Solitary, peaceful, free. How could no be the right answer? Everyone I knew and all the books said that the answer should be yes. But I came to see that the truth is itself and will not be dictated to by anyone. In the presence of that inner no, I came to see that the world is always as it should be, whether I opposed it or not. And I came to embrace reality with all my heart. I love the world without any conditions. If your answer is still yes, good. If you think that you can absolutely know that that's true, it's always fine to move on to question three. And so what she's telling you there is that there's no wrong way to do the work. You're simply going inside yourself to find out what your truth is, to find out what your answer is to that stressful thought. And hers, when she started this out, was Paul. Paul doesn't appreciate me. Is that true? You know, first she would probably say, yeah. Can you absolutely know that it's true? And when you really sit with that, you realize, gosh, I can't know that it's true, that he doesn't appreciate me. I mean, I know what it feels like to me, but I can't actually know that it's true that he doesn't appreciate me. Think about that. Just questioning your thoughts. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? Those are the first two questions. I'm just going to leave you with that for a moment. We're going to take a little musical break and, again, activate the right side of that brain. And I'm going to make sure I'm happening here on the Conscious Co-Creating Facebook page. If you have any comments or questions, go to Conscious Co-Creating Online Radio, and I will do my best to answer them. I'm going to play a little Billy McLaughlin here, Into the Light. This is one of my favorite guitar tunes. I hope you enjoy it. That, of course, was Billy McLaughlin, Into the Light. You're listening to UR Radio. This is Louisa Dyer, and our show is Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. If you want to know more about who I am and what I'm about, you're welcome to check out my website at louisadyer.com. And tonight we're actually talking about Byron Katie and her work, which is used all over the world in many, many countries, translated into many languages. She's actually done a book recently with Eckhart Tolle, which I haven't seen, but I'm imagining that's going to be a very cool book. She has been in Asheville before, and hopefully she'll be back here again at some point in the future. But there are quite a few people in town who do her work and are what I would think of as, they probably would not call themselves experts in it, but I would call them experts in it. So anyway, we were kind of looking at what the work is, and I'm just giving a very sort of general overview because I want you to see how simple it is, but also how incredibly powerful it is. The word inquiry is, she uses it synonymously with the work, and it just means these four questions and the turnaround that she does. So whatever the stressful thought is, you question it. Is it true? And most of the time, you know, we'll say, yeah, it's true. That's why I'm stressed out. Can you absolutely know for sure that it's true? And sometimes you'll still say yes. But most of the time, it's like, wow, I don't absolutely, especially if there's a should. I mean, should that really be different than it is? I mean, you know, like from God's perspective, I don't know how I would know that. I don't know how anyone would know that, actually. But anyway, let's continue with looking at the four questions. So the one that she's working with here is, Paul doesn't appreciate me. And so she's questioned that. Is it true? Can you absolutely know that it's true? The third question in the inquiry is, first of all, what she had to come to admit was that she didn't know if it was true. She couldn't know, actually, whether Paul was or was not appreciating her, because she could tell in herself that there were times when she was appreciating someone, but she hadn't expressed it. So maybe that was what was happening for Paul. She didn't know that for sure. So she's realized that she is believing this thought, Paul doesn't appreciate me, and that it's, you know, maybe not even true. And so the third question in the work is, how do you react when you believe that thought? And again, I'm going to read from A Thousand Names for Joy. With this question, we begin to notice internal cause and effect. You can see that when you believe the thought, there is an uneasy feeling, a disturbance that can range from mild discomfort to fear or panic even. How do you react when you believe that Paul doesn't appreciate you? Now, with your eyes closed, watch how you treat him when you believe that thought. Make a list. For example, I give him the look. I interrupt him. I punish him by not paying attention to him. I sulk. I withdraw. I stop appreciating him and become resentful of all the kind things that I have done for him. Continue making your list as you go inside and see how you treat yourself in that situation and how that feels. I imagine leaving him and imagine how much better my life would be without him. How he'll be sorry when I'm gone, how no one will appreciate him as much as I do. I am taken over by self-pity. I shut down, I isolate myself. When I believe that thought, I eat and sleep a lot, and I watch television for days. I feel depressed and lonely. Notice all the effects of believing the thought, Paul doesn't appreciate me. Notice where the thought hits you in the body. Close your eyes and track it. See how much of your body the thought takes over. After the four questions found me, again, this is Katie talking, I would notice thoughts like, people should be more loving, and I would see that they caused a feeling of uneasiness. I noticed that prior to the thought, there was peace. My mind was quiet and serene. This is who I am without my story. Then, in the stillness of awareness, I began to notice the feelings that came from believing or attaching to the thought. And in the stillness, I could see that if I were to believe the thought, the result would be a feeling of unease and sadness. When I ask, how do I react when I believe the thought that people would be more loving? I saw that not only did I have an uncomfortable feeling, that was obvious, but I also reacted with mental pictures to prove that the thought was true. I flew off into a world that didn't exist. I reacted by living in a stressed body, seeing everything through fearful eyes, a sleepwalker, someone in an endless nightmare. The remedy was simply to investigate. I love question 3. Wouldn't you answer it for yourself? Once you see the cause and effect of a thought, all your suffering begins to unravel. And then question 4 is, who would you be without the thought? And again, I'm going to be reading here. This is a very powerful question. Picture yourself standing in the presence of the person that you are having this thought about that's upsetting you. Picture yourself in the presence of that person when they're doing what you think they should or shouldn't be doing. Consider, for example, who you would be without the thought, "Paul doesn't appreciate me." Who would you be if you weren't even capable of thinking that thought? Who would you be if you weren't, if you couldn't even think it? Close your eyes and imagine Paul not appreciating you. Now imagine that you don't have the thought that Paul doesn't appreciate you, or that he even should. Take your time. Notice what is revealed to you. For many people, life without their story is literally unimaginable. They have no reference for it. So, "I don't know" is a common answer to this question. Other people answer by saying, "I'd be free, I'd be peaceful, I'd be a more loving person." You could also say, "I'd be clear enough to understand the situation and act efficiently." Without our stories, we are not only able to act clearly, kindly, and fearlessly, we are also a friend, a listener. We are people living happy lives. We are appreciation and gratitude that have become as natural as health itself. Happiness is the natural state for someone who knows that there's nothing to know and that we already have everything we need right here, right now. And so those are the 4 questions. Is it true? Can you absolutely know for sure that it's true? How do you react when you believe that thought? And who would you be without that thought? And those are some very brief ways to look at that. And then the last part of the work is a turnaround. And I think this might be one of the most difficult things for most people to understand, the turnaround. But basically what it is you make it opposite. So Paul doesn't appreciate me, for example. You want to turn that around to either, let's see how she does it here. I'm just going to read from her book because she describes it beautifully. To do the turnaround, rewrite your statement. First, write it as if it were written about you. Where you have written someone's name, put yourself. Instead of he or she, put I. For example, "Paul doesn't appreciate me" turns around to "I don't appreciate Paul" and "I don't appreciate myself." Another type is a 180-degree turnaround. To the extreme opposite, "Paul does appreciate me" instead of "Paul doesn't appreciate me." And then for each one of those turnarounds, find 3 genuine examples of how the turnaround is true in your life. This is not about blaming yourself or feeling guilty. It's about discovering alternatives that can bring you peace. And the turnaround is a very powerful part of the work. Because it's like as soon as we think that the problem is out there, as long as we think that what's happening inside of us that's unloving or unpeaceful is being caused by anyone or anything outside of us, then we don't have any power. The situation is hopeless. There's absolutely nothing we can do about it at that point. It means that we're forever in the role of victim. Who wants that, really? But when we bring the truth home to ourselves, and we begin to really set ourselves free. And so the inquiry, those 4 questions, combined with the turnaround, is what Katie calls the fast track to self-realization. So in her example, let's see if she actually talks about that. She doesn't really give any more examples about that, but we can talk about that just a little bit. So if you turn that thing around that she was saying, "Paul doesn't appreciate me," one turnaround is the complete opposite. "Paul does appreciate me." So what you would do, the question is that as true or truer than "Paul doesn't appreciate me"? And if you can find examples where Paul actually has appreciated you, then it's as true. And if you can find three examples, then it's probably truer. And the other turnaround that she did, when you turn it around to yourself to say, I don't appreciate Paul, is that as truer, that Paul doesn't appreciate me? Well, you can tell in that sentence, that instance, that's going to be absolutely true, because clearly I'm not appreciating Paul. I'm irritated and annoyed and really upset with him because I don't think he appreciates me. So I don't appreciate him is definitely as truer. But then the one that I think is really powerful for most of us is when we put ourselves in there. So instead of Paul doesn't appreciate me, I don't appreciate myself. And to look at the ways that that is as true or truer. And so that's a very, very fast, quick overview of what the work is. And I really wanted to get all of that out there just to show you how simple it is, but how incredibly powerful it is. Because what begins to happen very quickly when you do the work is the mind, which has been trying to help you by making, you know, by thinking this or thinking that, the ego, the mind actually thinks it's helping by being angry or being resentful or being whatever, because it thinks that's how it's going to protect you or get what it wants. And so it doesn't know that it's actually hurting you. And with this inquiry process, the mind suddenly realizes, oh, wait a minute, I'm thinking something that I don't even know it's true, and it's causing me a great deal of pain, and without it, I would feel so much better. And there's actually three things that are completely opposite that are just as true or truer. And so the brain sort of goes, why would I keep doing that? It's sort of, it's the thing about, you know, would you put your hand in the fire? No, the hand will not go into the fire because it's hot. It moves away automatically. And it is so amazing, the compassion and the power that are in these four questions, to just inquire and give your own mind the opportunity to actually look and see what's true, and to have the opportunity to notice what isn't, and that believing it causes a great deal of pain, and that you don't have to keep thinking it. And the mind actually, one of the things Katie's very clear about is that you can't make yourself stop thinking something. It's impossible. You cannot make yourself stop thinking something. But through doing inquiry, the thoughts will let you go. It's like the thoughts will stop being there because your brain can notice, first of all, it's probably not even true, I don't know. Second of all, it causes me pain, and without it, I'd feel great. And three things that are opposite to it, maybe only two things. Sometimes you can only do two turnarounds. But regardless, at least two things, usually three, absolute opposite things are just as true or truer, and they make me feel better. They make me feel good. And so it's like the brain automatically stops going for that thought. That thought actually stops happening because it's not a productive, happy thought. It doesn't get you what you want. It gets you pain. So that's a real broad, very brief overview of Byron Katie's work. Incredible, powerful processing. If you ever get a chance to see her, I highly recommend it. If you go to thework.com, you can download all of this information and do this for yourself. She offers all her workshops, I mean all her worksheets and explanations for how to do this for yourself completely free. And all three of her books that I've read, Loving What Is, I Need Your Love, Is That True?, and the A Thousand Names for Joy, all three of them are amazing books and approach the very same thing but in very different ways with like a slightly different perspective. And so I just want to say how much I've enjoyed talking about Byron Katie this evening, and I'm very, very happy that all of you have joined me. And I look forward to seeing you back here again next Thursday night at 8 Eastern. And I'm hoping to have somebody here to interview about Katie's work. I don't actually have that set up yet, but we might talk more about it if I do have someone. And if I don't, well, then who knows what we'll talk about. But we'll talk about something that will be a tool so that you can actually learn how to thrive instead of just survive, in a way to make yourself a whole lot happier and more peaceful. And that's what we're doing here. This is Conscious Co-Creating, Tools to Empower You. My name is Louisa Dyer, And I look forward to seeing you every Thursday evening at 8 Eastern. You're listening to UR Radio, and I hope you stick around for the next hour. I'm going to be playing some really cool music, and I'm going to actually go out ending this show with the theme song for this show, which is one of my very favorite groups, Here to Hear, and their song called Your Dreams. Your dreams brought you here. Where will they take you tomorrow? It's up to you to choose. That's the message. I hope you listen to the words. I hope you're having a great holiday season and staying very warm. And I'll see you next Thursday. Take good care.
Stay strong.